I welcome you to another week in our 4.5 year journey through all of God's inspired word. We were talking about the Absalom coup when we closed up everything last session. And we know that this coup has brought out the hatred of Absalom toward David and the support that apparently a lot of people in the kingdom have for Absalom in opposition to David. So David has evacuated the city of Jerusalem with those that support him. He's gone down next to the Jordan River, where he's awaiting word from the city of Jerusalem by a spy network that he's left in place as to what's going on in the city. And his big concern at this particular moment is that Ahithophel, his former counselor, a man that he trusted, is now going to provide support and advice to Absalom to the detriment of David's kingdom. So David, I believe, composes several psalms right around this time. And I thought it would be good for us to look at those psalms today. And we're going to start with one that has a superscription, which, remember, this is a heading that is very ancient, but not necessarily inspired. The heading on Psalm number 3, that's where we're going to start, says, "A Psalm of David when he fled from Absalom his son." So more than likely, this psalm is tied into the emotion of this evacuation from Jerusalem and the beginning of this little mini civil war that happens because of Absalom's long-term anger against his father. So let's let the emotion of the moment also come to us. Psalm number 3, starting at verse 1. "Oh, he who is, how many are my foes! Many are rising against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no salvation for him in God. Selah." Now, Selah probably is a musical indicator, saying to kind of bring the music to a crescendo here, or have a little musical interlude. So just don't get too caught up into that. Look at the wording, though. David expects that all of these people that are coming against him think that God's not going to save him. David's response, verse 3, "But you, O he who is, are a shield about me, my glory, and the lifter of my head." See, that's an idiom for the idea of when we're feeling so down and we've got our faces down toward the ground. Somebody comes and kind of lifts our heads up, lifts us up and says, "It's not as bad as you think. It's not going to be the end of you. Look up here." And so that's what God is to David in this context. Verse 4, "I cried aloud to he who is, and he answered me from his holy hill, Selah." Now the holy hill at this point is the palace hill. It's where the Ark of the Covenant is located. And remember, they tried to take the Ark of the Covenant with David during the evacuation of the city, and he sent the Ark back and said, "No, if God wills, I'll be back and be able to worship and pray before the Ark underneath its tent there in the palace grounds." So here he is. God is listening to him, he says, from his holy hill. Verse 5, "I lay down and slept. I woke again, for he who is sustained me. I will not be afraid of many thousands of people who have set themselves against me all around." So maybe by the time he wrote this, he'd had one night of sleep away from Jerusalem. "Arise, O he who is, save me, O my God, for you strike all my enemies on the cheek. You break the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to he who is. Your blessings be on your people, Selah." So even though David knows that there's a ton of people that are against him at this moment, if God is for him, it won't matter. because salvation belongs to God. Let's go to Psalm 31 next. Now, this psalm does not have a historical tie-in on its superscription, but I believe some of the content feels like it comes from this time period, so that's why I've selected it for now. It says, "To the choir master, a psalm of David. In you, O he who is, do I take refuge. Let him never be put to shame. In your righteousness, deliver me." So he's asking God to keep him delivered from all this stuff. "Incline your ear to me, rescue me speedily, be a rock of refuge for me, a strong fortress to save me. For you are my rock and my fortress. For your name's sake, you lead me and guide me. You take me out of the net they have hidden for me, for you are my refuge." So David sees the dire straits that he's in. He's in trouble. People are out to get him. And he knows the only way out of this is to put himself completely into God's hands, which is exactly what he says in verse number 5, but I held it back because it has a prophetic tie-in to the crucifixion of Jesus. Because here's what it says: "Into your hand I commit my spirit. You've redeemed me, O he who is faithful God." So David puts himself into God's hands, just like Jesus put himself into the Father's hands when he laid down his life for salvation's sake. So David is the one who kind of penned those lines that then are echoed by Jesus from the cross. Verse number 6, "I hate those who pay regard to worthless idols, but I trust in he who is." Now keep in mind, the wording of love and hate in Hebrew in particular, also in the New Testament, coming out of that Hebrew mindset. Love is commitment, hate is non-commitment. So David is not going to be on the side of those who side with idols. He puts his trust in he who is the creator of heaven and earth. Verse 7, "I will rejoice and be glad in your steadfast love, because you have seen my affliction. You've known the distress of my soul. You have not delivered me into the hand of the enemy. You have set my feet in a broad place." So God has gotten him out of Jerusalem just in time. "Be gracious to me, O he who is, for I'm in distress. My eye is wasted from grief, my soul and my body also. For my life is spent with sorrow and my years with sighing. My strength fails because of my iniquity and my bones waste away." Now that echoes a little bit of what he said in Psalm 51, written not very long after he had finally fessed up to his sin with Bathsheba. And so I think that David might be tying in the bad situation under Absalom's coup with his own choices bringing these eventual consequences. Because I think we can see pretty easily that the Absalom coup is directly related to David's own poor choices, starting with the Bathsheba adultery. Verse number 11, "Because of all my adversaries, I've become a reproach, especially to my neighbors, and an object of dread to my acquaintances. Those who see me in the street flee from me." Now, this is interesting. Is it possible that as Absalom's popularity grew, David's popularity sank, and that he was feeling this separation from the people, that people were not as into him as they used to be? And David would even notice that people were kind of avoiding him. Verse number 12, "I have not forgotten like one who is dead." I have been forgotten like one who is dead and have become like a broken vessel. Little simile there that, you know, once people die, over a period of time, you don't really talk about them anymore. When something gets broken, no matter how valuable it once was, it kind of gets forgotten about. And so David's kind of feeling like that. For I hear the whispering of many, terror on every side, as they scheme together against me, as they plot to take my life. You can probably imagine that as David is going back over in his mind, in his escape camp, that there were signals that he was in trouble, that people were whispering behind his back and making plots against him, until finally Absalom brings all that together. And that's where David's in such a mess right now. So now here he is confessing that there's really only one way out of this situation. Verse number 14. But I trust in you, O he who is. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hand. Rescue me from the hand of my enemies and from my persecutors. Make your face shine on your servant. Save me in your steadfast love. O he who is, let me not be put to shame, for I call upon you. Let the wicked be put to shame. Let them go silently to Sheol. Let the lying lips be mute, which speak insolently against the righteous in pride and contempt. Now, this is one of the reasons I think this psalm may have been written at this time that we're talking about, because David is being lied about by quite a few people that used to be on his side. Ahithophel would be one of them, the counselor that has now gone over to the Absalom side. Oh, how abundant is your goodness, which you've stored up for those who fear you, and worked for those who take refuge in you, in the sight of the children of mankind. In the cover of your presence you hide them from the plots of men. You store them in your shelter from the strife of tongues. So David sees that God is the one that's getting him through all this. Blessed be he who is, for he has wondrously shown his steadfast love for me when I was in a besieged city. Now, is he talking metaphorically here that over the last several years, as Absalom gained more and more popularity, that David was kind of feeling some of the pressure from that? Because he would have. At the same time, though, there might be some literalness to this, because David had to rapidly evacuate the city of Jerusalem because he knew that Absalom's people were on the way. And so in that sense, he may have felt that the city of Jerusalem was already under siege. Verse 22, I have said in my alarm, I am cut off from your sight, but you heard the voice of my pleas for mercy when I cried to you for help. Love he who is, all you his saints. He who is preserves the faithful, but abundantly repays the one who acts in pride. Be strong, let your heart take courage, all you who wait for he who is. So I think this is that last bit that David is kind of talking to himself, that you need to love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and understand that God's the one that gets you through the tough times. And so you need to buck up, be strong, be courageous, and wait for God to take care of it. Well, let's go ahead and go to Psalm 55 now. Psalm number 55. And again, we have a superscription, but no history on it. To the choir master with stringed instruments, a maskil of David. Then the actual song has some of the emotion that I think we're talking about right now. Give ear to my prayer, O God. Hide not yourself from my plea for mercy. Attend to me and answer me. I am restless in my complaint, and I moan because of the noise of the enemy, because of the oppression of the wicked. For they drop trouble upon me, and in anger they bear a grudge against me. That most certainly would describe the attitudes of a lot of people around David, including his son Absalom, and his former friend and counselor Ahithophel. My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death have fallen upon me. Fear and trembling come upon me, and horror overwhelms me. And I say, oh, that I had the wings like a dove. I would fly away and be at rest. Yes, I would wander far away. I would lodge in the wilderness. Selah. And so David kind of pictures the idea of, if only I could get out of the way of all this trouble, God. Verse 8, I would hurry to find a shelter from the raging wind and tempest. Destroy, O my master, divide their tongues, for I see violence and strife in the city. So again, he's targeting a lot of his emotion against those that are saying negative things about him, like Absalom, like Ahithophel. Day and night they go around it on its walls, and iniquity and trouble are within it. Ruin is in its midst. Oppression and fraud do not depart from its marketplace. So he sees Jerusalem being in deep trouble too. For it is not an enemy who taunts me, then I could bear it. It's not an adversary who deals insolently with me, then I could hide from him. But it is you, a man, my equal, my companion, my familiar friend. So I think this particular song is directed completely against Ahithophel, who is now giving advice to Absalom against David. You remember the first thing that he recommends is that Absalom should make his break with his father clear by sleeping with all the concubines that David left behind at Jerusalem. Now, David thought that those women would be perfectly safe. They were not full-fledged wives, so they really were not counted. Their children were not counted in the inheritance rights to the throne. So David thought that Absalom would just ignore them. But on Ahithophel's advice, he publicly pitches a tent and goes into these women one at a time, effectively rapes them, and by that makes to the people clear, I have no intention of reconciling with my father. I am taking over his kingdom completely. And so that's the type of advice that David is very angry about being given by someone that used to be his friend. Verse number 14 of this psalm. We used to take sweet counsel together. Within God's house, we walked in the throng. So David, no doubt, went to worship services with Ahithophel at the tabernacle, probably at the Ark of the Covenant shrine tent in the palace grounds. But now he's giving advice to Absalom to basically get David killed. Verse 15, David prays against him, I think. Let death steal over them. Let them go down to Sheol alive, for evil is in their dwelling place and in their heart. So he believes that whoever this friend is, and I think it might have been Ahithophel, is now a wicked individual. But I call to God and to he who is, who will save me. Evening and morning and at noon, I utter my complaint and moan, and he hears my voice. Evening and morning, that's the two worship times at the tabernacle and probably also at the Ark of the Covenant. It was the time of incense. Noon is right smack between the two. And so David seems to have this habit of praying mid-morning, mid-afternoon, middle of the day. He may have also prayed at sunrise and sunset. And now all of his prayers are about what's going on in his life, the horror and the sadness. But he knows God is hearing him. Verse 18, he redeems my soul in safety from the battle that I wage, for many are arrayed against me. God will hear and humble them. He who is enthroned from of old, Selah, because they do not change and do not fear God. So He sees this as the breaking of a relationship that doesn't look like it's going to be repairable. My companion stretched out his hand against his friends. He violated his covenant. His speech was smooth as butter, and yet war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet they were drawn swords. You can kind of see why I think this is written about Ahithophel. Verse number 22, cast your burden on he who is, and he will sustain you. He will never permit the righteous to be moved. But you, O God, will cast them down into the pit of destruction. Men of blood and treachery shall not live out half their days, but I will trust in you. How about Psalm 69? Psalm 69. And this also has a bit of a superscription, but no historical tie-in, but the emotion again sounds similar. To the choir master, according to the lilies of David. Save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. I sink in deep mire where there is no foothold. I've come into deep waters and the flood sweeps over me. I'm weary with my crying out. My throat is parched. My eyes grow dim with waiting for my God. Now, it could be that David has experienced being in the muck of a swampland. And that bit of panic that sometimes comes when you feel like, oh no, I'm going to get sucked down and drowned here. And so David goes back into that sort of emotion. He says, that's what I'm feeling like right now. I feel like this situation is going to drown me. And that's why he's calling on God. And he just continually does it. His throat is parched. His voice is going hoarse because he's doing so much crying out to God. Verse 4, more in number than the hairs of my head are those who hate me without cause. Mighty are those who would destroy me, those who attack me with lies. What I did not steal, must I now restore? Oh God, you know my folly. The wrongs I have done are not hidden from you. So he mixes here a complaint that he is not being treated fair with the idea, God, you know where I have screwed up. That's not hidden from you. But I need you, God, to save me through this time. Verse 6, let not those who hope in you be put to shame through me. He who is Lord over the armies. We've got the divine name combined with the word for Lord and the word for armies. Let not those who seek you be brought to dishonor through me, O God of Israel. For it is for your sake that I have borne reproach, that dishonor has covered my face. I've become a stranger to my brothers and an alien in my mother's house. So David feels like a lot of stuff's going against him. I believe he's probably got mixed feelings here. I think, as I've expressed before, that he understands a lot of this is kind of connected to his own sin. But much of it is people acting in an exceptionally sinful fashion against David. And that's got him bugged. Now, verse 9, David expresses something that was true in his life. We already kind of talked about that, and his desire to build a temple to God. But it is interesting that the apostles saw Jesus being so caught up into defending the holy integrity of the temple building that the apostles remembered this line out of David's psalm. Verse number 9, for zeal for your house has consumed me, and the reproaches of those who reproach you have fallen on me. So the apostles applied the first line of verse 9 to Jesus casting out the money changers from the temple. But it seems like David is applying it to himself, that he wants to build God's temple, but now he's got people that are not really in good terms with God anymore, and they're taking it out on David. When I wept and humbled my soul with fasting, it became my reproach. When I made sackcloth my clothing, I became a byword to them. I am the talk of those who sit in the gate, and the drunkards make songs about me. Now, I believe it may be that David's thinking about that time after the Bathsheba episode, when David was very repentant, that he went through this time period, that he wore sackcloth, and he cried about his sin. And he did times of great repentant acts to God. And maybe people mocked him because of that. And David now feels that God needs to do something about those who didn't want to extend to God or to David the same grace that God had. As for me, my prayer is in you, O he who is, at an acceptable time, O God, in the abundance of your steadfast love, answer me in your saving faithfulness. Deliver me from sinking in the mire. Let me be delivered from my enemies, from the deep waters. Let not the flood sweep over me, or the deep swallow me up, or the pit close its mouth over me. So you can kind of hear that same simile we had earlier. Answer me, O he who is, for your steadfast love is good. According to your abundant mercy, turn to me. Hide not your face from your servant, for I am in distress. Make haste to answer me. Draw near to my soul. Redeem me. Ransom me because of my enemies. So we're not going to get through this psalm, obviously, but you can feel the emotion. David feels like everything is going against him, and at the same time, he knows God can get him through this time if he will just submit to him and beg for him to intervene on his behalf. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to mark our spot right there, and tomorrow we'll come in and we'll finish this psalm up and maybe a couple more psalms that might come from this time period. And then we'll jump back in and see what happens in answer to David's prayers that God save him from the Absalom coup.